Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd. On the Double with the Double S Express.
Welcome to another edition of On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd. Show 46 out the gate.
Man, it is, it's an exciting time for show number 46 and some great things happening in the realm of sports. Of course, March Madness, you know, some great games going on. And, you know, there's this one guy in free agency in the NFL that is causing a big stir over this past weekend or the past few days, Sean Wally.
To Deshaun or not to Deshaun?
That is the, what should we say, $10 million question maybe? You know, you're looking at Deshaun Jackson. I mean, this guy is probably the most sought-after person in the NFL right now. And, you know, with just reason, 4 years in the NFL, and last year was probably his best year, Sean. And now he is looking for a lucrative contract. There's been, you know, talks that he would be in Kansas City, talks that he would be in Oakland. You know, now I hear that he is in Washington, D.C. as we speak, and there are about six, seven other teams that have fallen into this. But where this falls interesting for me, Sean, is, you know, my beloved Raiders that are posturing themselves to, you know, shall I say, do this the right way? If there is a right way in you know, luring a player to your team. And so, you know, the Raiders right now, Reggie McKenzie is, it sounds like they're doing a thorough background check for Mr. Deshaun Jackson. So what say you on this one?
Well, it's a very touchy area and you don't know which way to go because, of course, the reports came out via NJ.com last week that wide receiver formerly of the Philadelphia Eagles, Deshaun Jackson, has ties to gang members. And there was also a story, I believe, that you had sent me, Sean, from CSN Bay Area, that it actually is true that Deshaun has former friends, former classmates that didn't go the right road. And they chose the gang life. And that's not necessarily Jackson's views. And he's saying he's not involved with any gangs. Yet there are some instances with him in photos where certain people say he's flashing gang signs. There's a couple videos of him actually on the field flashing the same sign. Whether or not it really is a specific gang sign, who really knows? And really, NFL teams have to be very careful nowadays with what's gone on with Aaron Hernandez, and nobody wants that situation again.
Man, Sean, you've definitely hit it on the head on this one. And this one, you know, I talked with you earlier about this, and this is a very sensitive subject for me. You know, as I lament on everything that's going on, you know, the biggest issue that I have is with this situation is this. You and I are probably maybe, man, I don't know, 2-3 degrees of separation from knowing somebody who knows somebody who possibly has gang affiliations. And you know, the biggest problem that I have with this whole situation is how the story came out at an inopportune time, how it was dealt with. And Sean, if this was any other team, I could probably swallow it a little bit more. And the reason why I say that is because we're just talking speculation right now on Deshaun Jackson. You had mentioned seeing him in pictures and seeing him in photos, flashing gang signs and doing those certain things. Those things may be true. And again, I don't know the young man. I just know that he's a fantastic football player. At the same time, you know, these are speculations. The speculation was is that he is in connection with certain crimes, and one of them being murder. And that is huge, especially when you're talking about, you know, somebody who's getting paid millions and millions of dollars now. Now you're talking about somebody with that speculation. But again, we don't know the actual truth to it. Sean, here's the problem that I have with the situation right now. The problem that I have is that you're, and for those of you who are first time listeners and haven't had a chance to go on our website, I'm an African American male. And it's very sensitive to me when this type of situation happens the way it's happened, because it's a polarizing situation. We're calling DeSean Jackson a gang member. And again, really, we don't even understand or know, you know, his background. And at the same time, we're dealing with an organization, and owner, I'm sure owner Jeff Lurie is a fantastic guy, a Boston native, just wants to own a team and do the right thing. But when you're talking about just a year ago, on his same program, in his same organization, one Riley Cooper, a wide receiver on the Philadelphia Eagles football team, comes out and you blatantly see him calling with racial epithets. It's on YouTube. It's everywhere. And, you know, when you see that and he gets a contract, it's almost like he gets a pass. It's almost like, you know, we have to, you know, take a look and take a step back and understand and, you know, whatever it was, those players on the team had to say, that's my teammate, meaning Riley Cooper, that's my teammate, and I have to adjust myself and adjust my way of thinking. Now, again, I don't know Jeff Lurie as an owner, but I can tell you that it's a bad stand. It looks very bad right now when you take a stand for one issue and you offer a young man millions of dollars in Riley Cooper, and then here's DeSean Jackson with speculation, and you let him go. It's just a sad time in the city of brotherly love for me, because where's the love? Where's the love at in this issue? And so, and as you were saying, Sean, as far as the article that I sent, the article was CSN's Bay Area, Monty Poole had an interesting, very interesting story on the reason why DeSean Jackson does what he does. And of course, you know, he grew up in the rough, you know, the inner city of Los Angeles. And of course, you know, I'm sure he had gang affiliations, and, you know, he knows some people in jail, let's face it. And so what he does is he goes back to San Quentin and he visits some of the people that he grew up with, because there's a sense of loyalty to that. And there's a sense of loyalty to where they took care of him. And they said, hey, you're going to make, and I'm sorry, Long Beach, you're going to make it out. And make sure that you keep your nose clean and stay out of trouble, because you don't want to end up like us. So DeSean Jackson owes them a sense of loyalty. Now, am I saying that DeSean is totally clean and is totally right on this whole thing? No. But I do understand the loyalty side. I do understand that he has made it, and there's a pride in that for the people who haven't made it. And so for us to actually jump on him, make him this person that he probably isn't, I really think is unfair. I think that the Philadelphia Eagles organization really dropped the ball on this one, Sean Wally. And, you know, I wish nothing but the best for DeSean Jackson moving forward.
What's interesting to me, and what I don't like about the Eagles releasing Jackson right after the NJ.com story came out, is it looks like they're releasing him because of the possibility of his involvement or ties to people that don't live the best life or didn't take the best path.
And you know, Sean, that's not the case. That's not the case. And, you know, part of it is the media actually taking an issue in a story and just exploding it. Chip Kelly, for instance, you know, had a tremendous program at the University of Oregon. Let's take a look at his roster. There are a lot of kids that he has recruited out of Southern California. As a matter of fact, Southern California is a hotbed for athletes. And it could be said that a lot of the kids that were recruited by Chip Kelly in Southern California had that same type of affiliation that DeSean Jackson had. So what changed? So, you know, over the past year and a half, what changed in their way of thinking? And so, you know, it's just a huge mystery on why, you know, the Philadelphia Eagles wanted to take the stand. And I understand that, you know, Deshaun was set to make, you know, a huge purse going into next year. Philadelphia Eagles are still on the hook for that. But when you're talking about two issues in a matter of a year, one dealing with, you know, a racial epithet, and then the other one, you're going to label a young man as a gangster. Where in the world? I mean, you're talking about a business owner that should have more control in his program and in his organization than what's being portrayed right now. And if you're a Philadelphia Eagles fan, you have to be disgusted in what's going on.
Here we are 4 days after Jackson was released. And as far as I know, to the research I've done, I haven't found any current or former Eagles or anybody else in the NFL who's played with Jackson or even back to his college days that says, yes, he's a suspect character. He hangs out with shady guys. He's a loner, you know, kind of the things that were said about Aaron Hernandez in New England. And it's to the point where I find it hard to believe that nobody in the organization was aware of any of these issues before they drafted him or a year ago, 2 years ago. And if you look at what Jackson tweeted out, a picture from, I believe, 2005, it is from his parents' living room. He's still in high school, sitting there with one Pete Carroll. Now, who has been one of the best at taking kids from the inner city and giving them the right path, the right direction at USC and doing things in the inner city? And if there's a guy that would know that, okay, this guy's really not on the up and up and doesn't have the right character, it would probably be a Pete Carroll. And here he was trying to recruit Jackson. And in the end, Jackson decided to go to Cal. But, you know, I find it just hard to believe that all this is just magically popping up now and nobody knew anything before Friday.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, guilty by association has always been, you know, something in our society that can bring you down. But at the same time, like you're saying, you're talking about somebody in Pete Carroll who, you know, definitely knows how to reach out to inner city kids. Of course, we had a guest on our show a few weeks ago in Cornell Ward, who's, you know, best friends with Pete Carroll. And, you know, Cornell, Coach Ward is one of the types of individuals that actually goes in and reaches out and does a lot of things and connects with Coach Carroll in that type of a magnitude. So, yeah, I mean, you know, doing your homework, you know, and of course I joked about it a few minutes ago about the Oakland Raiders actually, you know, taking a long look, extensive look into the background. This should have been something that had been done a long time ago. And I believe had been done a long time ago. And it's just a huge question mark as to why now? Why in the world is this coming out now? And, you know, why is this happening to, you know, an individual who is having such a successful career?
Do you think it's just a money thing? Because they paid them all the guaranteed money. The rest of the contract was fluff above and beyond. He was still owed roughly $10-11 million per season. But it's, you know, not guaranteed in the NFL after your initial X number of dollars that's guaranteed. So they didn't have to write him a check to leave. They can use that money elsewhere now if they choose to. And maybe that $10, $11 million for one player now goes to two players.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, it's definitely a money issue. You know, that's one of the things. You know, but we're not talking about, you know, an older player. We're talking about in DeSean Jackson, he's only had four NFL seasons. So this is, you know, the time of his career to where he's actually going to turn the corner and continue to do some great things for the next 3 years. I know that the 2014 NFL draft is probably one of the deeper drafts as far as receivers are concerned. And, you know, there's talks that you can get a wide receiver in the fourth, fifth, and sixth round and actually find a jewel that could be, you know, a possible starter in your organization within a year or two. And so I don't know what, you know, this reasoning is and why this came out around the same time as, you know, releasing. For part of me says that the Philadelphia Eagles were going to release him anyways. And if they were going to release him anyways, well, why? Why are you releasing him? I mean, if it's a money issue, hey, great. But it's just unfortunate that this story comes out around the same time as, you know, the Philadelphia Eagles are going to release him.
Yeah, and that's something that our big-time guest number one will have good insight on is players and money and contracts. And let's head out now to the holysmokenuts.com phone lines and welcome in sports agent Lee Steinberg. Lee, thanks so much for your time tonight.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Hey, Lee.
I spent the day up at Baylor.
Hey, Lee, I just wanted to first and foremost say a belated happy birthday to you. I know you celebrated a birthday here this past week, and so happy last week, so happy birthday to you.
You know, it's like Ramadan. We can celebrate it for weeks, so you're not belated. You're right there.
So, Lee, we have a before you came on here, we were just discussing a – you know, that elephant in the room that has been going on, or actually it's out now, as far as Deshaun Jackson is concerned. And, of course, you dealt with, you know, top-notch and high-profiled athletes. You know, kind of give us an idea on what's going on, you know, in the athlete's mind right now. And as an agent, you being one of the top sports agents around, what's going on as far as an agent is concerned, as far as preparing the athlete for the next step, going forward?
Well, first of all, your job is to anticipate every eventuality for the athlete. So, if this was an issue between the team and Jackson, you would want to be in so much contact that you could somehow not get caught just being released unless you wanted to be released. Now, I don't know that we have the whole story in that situation. He had his best year last year, and he's still in the prime of his career. So this is not a player you would waive under ordinary circumstances. This is a player that would be a star for you. And so there's something in this that they discovered or dealt with that we just don't know at this point. And what's difficult is that it affects other teams because they question if Philadelphia took one of its superstars and just let him go, what is it that's so odious, so unmanageable? So it's a difficult situation, but the player has a gifted talent, and it only takes one team to sign him. And basically, you will always find a team, no matter what the problem of the player is, that believes we can make a difference. We can bring it out of him. So they got 31 of the teams to deal with. They'll find a home for him.
So let's talk about that, Lee, because, you know, one of the things that you were just talking about is the perception that's given to other teams and whether they should take that next step. Now, I'd mentioned the Oakland Raiders have thrown it out there that they are posturing in doing a background check. Isn't that something that's normally done with all 32 teams to begin with? Why is that something that's magnified now?
Normally, a player comes through the draft process, and his background is scoured. They go into every single aspect of his life, relationships, at high-priced security firms that do this type of vetting. So whatever it is, it had to be something that occurred between draft day and now, because otherwise they just don't miss major issues like this. But, again, remember Aaron Hernandez and the New England Patriots are supposed to be the most scrupulous of checkers, and somehow they miss this aspect. So I think it's but here's why the character issue is so critical. If for some reason a player is disqualified, who's on a long-term contract, either for behavioral reasons or other reasons, if he has to be traded or anything that happens, or he retires or they suspend him, whatever deferred bonus there was on the last contract accelerates immediately against the cap, which means that not only is the team out the money, they're out the cap room to replace the player. They just have dead cap room. So it's a real disastrous situation. So I'm sure that's why they're doing background checks. Reminds me of a situation when Dan Marino got drafted. He didn't get drafted exactly in the first round in 1983 where people thought he was. And then rumors started to spread about him. So it's on draft day, and no one really knew, but the fact he hadn't gone where he's supposed to made teams leery, and he drops all the way down to the Dolphins. Best thing that ever happened to him, because he had a miraculous team around him. But my point is that unless the teams are communicating directly, it's sort of a mystery. You don't have that gifted talent and a game breaker the way Jackson is being given away.
Sports agent Lee Steinberg of Steinberg Sports and Entertainment, kind enough to join us on the Double with the Double S Express. And Lee, have you ever lost sleep in your career over potential off the field issues with players or players that you were on the fence with in terms of their character?
So here's what we do. I try to profile athletes so that we know that they'll be role models, that they'll be able to retrace their roots and go back to the college, high school, pro level and set up programs and enhance the quality of life. That character is exceedingly important because athletes can be role models. So do I miss occasionally? Yes. Ryan Leaf got through our early screening program. And once he got pushed away, then he sort of turned inward. And those are really difficult cases that you'd like to avoid. I also had Ricky Williams. When he retired prematurely and was sitting in the pup tent in Australia, and I was the only contact, yes, you lose sleep because it wasn't something I agreed with. You shouldn't leave the team like that. And yet I didn't want to see him thrown on the trash heap of history, and he's still a good person. So those are very, very difficult. The best way to avoid them is to mentor players in terms of public and private conduct. And try to mentor them in integrating into a team, and then early warning system have a way of being able to try to screen for that. There are even psychological tests that will show a propensity for someone to exhibit emotional or other problems.
Lee, in the hundreds of players that you've represented in your career, who are you most proud of that maybe they were the more higher profile, or maybe they weren't, but somebody you just got to know and helped them grow?
Well, Warren Moon is the obvious choice because we sort of grew up together. We started in 1978 and we spent 6 years in Canada. He went back and set up a scholarship fund at the high school he and I both attended. Then he did it at the junior college. Then he did it at the University of Washington. And then he did it a Crescent Moon Foundation, where he sent hundreds of kids to 100 kids on his scholarships to college. But mostly we were together for 6 years in Canada and 17 years in the NFL. And he's sort of like a brother. And then he did me the honor of having me present him at the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 2006.
Lee Steinberg, kind enough to join us on the Double with the Double S Express. And yeah, Lee, I remember you presenting that trophy to Warren Moon in the Hall of Fame. And man, that has to be you know, one of the greater accomplishments of having to be there and present one of the athletes that you've represented?
So, really, if you think about it, you'd like an athlete to be drafted high, but then you have to track that and say, if they could make the Hall of Fame, then that's the ultimate honor for players. They all desperately want to do that. They want to win the Super Bowl and then put the cap on the career as Hall of Fame. So we had Steve Young, Warren Moon, Troy Aikman, Thurman Thomas, Derek Thomas, Bruce Smith, and Howie Long. And the other ultimate testimony is, successful careers? Are they able in second career? So three of the players we work with have actually become minority owners of NFL teams. That's work done with the Atlanta Falcons. That's Ray Childers with the Houston Texans, and Daron Cherry, although he recently divested, with the Jacksonville Jaguars. So what you're looking is, can at the end of the career someone have still maintain their charitable and community program and make a second career in business or media that's totally fulfilling? So can you make those years afterwards just as good as years prior?
And Lee, one of the things that is very, very telling about you and the type of person that you are, there are lots of films and lots of movies that are out. Of course, there's Jerry Maguire and Any Given Sunday and For the Love of the Game, and even like hit shows like Arliss that was an HBO hit. A lot of those shows were asked of you to actually give insight on what it's like to be a sports agent. Is that correct?
It was more than that on Jerry Maguire. The director, Cameron Crowe, followed me around, asked if he could do it, to pick up atmosphere concerning a sports agent. So he followed me to the NFL draft in 1993, to the league meetings in 1993. He made a trek to a couple of our Super Bowl parties, went to games with me, pro scouting day at SC, and I told him stories, lots and lots of stories. We sort of made an agreement I wouldn't talk about what showed up on the screen, but then I had to vet the script to make sure the willing suspension of disbelief that keeps you in a motion picture wasn't fractured. And so you didn't think it was phony or a spoof. And I actually, they descended on my office, took all my legal, all my photographs, and magically, Jerry Maguire's head goes on my shoulders. They took my legal awards, and Jerry Maguire gets them. And then at the, I had to show Cuba Gooding Jr., put him into role. And part of how I did that was taking him down to the Phoenix Super Bowl. And I made him pretend he was a wide receiver for the whole film, for the whole Super Bowl. And he did pretty well. And I actually had to show Jerry O'Connell how to throw a football because he had gone to, he played the quarterback, Cush, because he had gone to NYU and they didn't have football there. So it was an interesting experience. And I won't tell you what actually went up on the screen, but when my former wife saw it with me, she said, "Did you have to tell them everything?"
Well, it's always good to, you know, when you're watching a movie, to know that there's a lot of factual stuff that goes on in there. And I mean, you know, you've lived it. And, you know, when you said that, you know, Warren Moon was probably one of the, you know, the best athletes that you've represented, you know, I was kind of thinking that you would say Steve Barkowski, because I believe was he the first quarterback or first athlete that you represented as a sports agent?
I was living in a dorm. They moved the freshman football team in the dorm, and Steve Barkowski was the very first pick in the first round of the draft, and we got the largest rookie contract in NFL history, and it eclipsed Joe Namath and O.J. Simpson. And at And so then, you know, I went on to represent 60 first round draft picks and the very first pick in the draft in 8 separate years, and had half the starting quarterbacks. And we had a big baseball practice and a big basketball practice, and did boxers like Lennox Lewis. And the U.S. Team in the World Cup soccer in 1994. So that's how it started. But all those athletes were impactful.
Lee, if somebody was looking to get into sports marketing and sports agency, sports representation, how would you recommend they do that?
By getting an internship, studying business, some form of business. Law school, business school is a good combination, and it's and then get an internship. You know, if you want to be a sports agent, but you can also work in sports television, motion sports. You can work for a team, a league, a conference, and every level of that, or a players association. But have some ideals, have a sense of ethics, have bring a new caring for athletes into the picture. But this is not a profession for the faint of heart. It's a profession that that is for the best and brightest, who are willing to dedicate themselves, throw their effort and energy into it, and make it a passion.
Lee Steinberg, Steinberg Sports and Entertainment, thank you so much for your time and insight tonight. We appreciate having you on the show.
It's been my pleasure. And buy my book, The Agent, my 40-year career making deals and changing the game, St. Martin's Press.
Absolutely. I've got a link of that up on our bbsradio.com page, and a link to purchase that and your cover shot of the book. So great insight on the industry as well.
Thank you. Good night.
All right. Have a good evening, Lee.
There goes sports super agent Lee Steinberg.
Man, you talk about a stud. You know, somebody that has represented a lot of athletes. And when I say a lot of athletes, his clients include, like I mentioned earlier, Steve Barkowski, Steve Young, Troy Aikman, Warren Moon, Bruce Smith, Thurman Thomas, the list goes on and on and on. And man, it's just it's good to have him on, and we could have talked a lot more. I'm sure we'll have him in as a guest moving forward.
This is Michael David from Seattle. I've lost 35 pounds of fat, and my waist went from size 38 to size 32. I have more energy, and I look and feel 20 years younger.
Andro 400 is the natural, safe, and effective way to lose weight, gain energy, increase testosterone, and feel young again. Too good to be true? Then listen to what Bob and Jim have to say.
And in 30 days, I lost approximately 10 pounds. After another 30 days, I lost another 8 pounds, so a total of 18 pounds lost in 60 days. My libido has been increased 100-fold, and I feel like a teenager again.
I've been taking Andro 400 for about a year now. I've lost a little over 30 pounds. I have more energy. The biggest thing is just feeling better about myself, a lot more confidence.
Guys, it's time to discover what Andro 400 can do for you. Call 888-400-0435. That's 888-400-0435, or go to andro400.com.
What's my image?
What's my image?
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
Let's get back to great sports talk with big-time guests on The Double with the Double S Express.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd, show 46, rolling on.
Yep, man, what a great first guest in Lee Steinberg, a special sports agent coming on to the show and giving us that, that insight on what it takes to prepare an athlete for going into the big leagues, man.
And just think of the caliber of not only person, but caliber of sports agent Lee Steinberg is. Goodness, he represents so many Hall of Famers and has had just an illustrious career.
Yeah, as I was mentioning before we went to the break, there are a lot of athletes in the, a few of them in the Hall of Fame right now that he's represented. I mean, I'm sure he has stories to tell us on and on and on, and again, we'll look to have him on the show sometime in the future.
Let's head back out to the holysmokednuts.com phone lines and welcome in big time guest number two, and that is ESPN college basketball analyst Malcolm Huckabee. Malcolm, thanks so much for your time tonight.
No problem, guys.
Hey, thanks for being on the show, Malcolm. Big, big weekend this past weekend in March Madness. And boy, I tell you, everybody's bracket has been, mine was tore up since day one. And so, it's an interesting Final Four that set. Was it everything that you thought it would be? How's your bracket looking?
Well, I'll tell you what, I go back to my playing days. Look, I ruined my own family bracket when I was in the NCAA tournament. We knocked off, back in 94, knocked off defending national champ and number one overall seed North Carolina, getting into the Sweet 16 and then beating Indiana and get to the Elite Eight. So this is a great time of the year. My bracket is tore up. I'm not even going to tell you my picks. I do have one in there, but, that's the beauty of March Madness. You really don't know anybody who tells you otherwise. Obviously, there's some teams that in the past, you look at those UNLV teams, some of the great Duke teams where you knew at least they were going to get to the Elite Eight or the round of 16, but there's so much more parity now where I'm not surprised at all come NCAA tournament time when you see teams that make it that you didn't expect to get to the Elite Eight and now obviously Final Four.
Yeah, and Malcolm, you're talking about when you played, of course, Boston College, going to the Elite Eight and defeating North Carolina. This type of thing and this type of parity has been going on for a while. When you talk about NCAA and you talk about NCAA basketball and this type of bracket that's set up, the conferences that come to mind are always the Big Ten and the ACC and the Big East. But when you look at the Final Four this year and you look at the two teams from the SEC, one from being Florida and the other Kentucky, it kind of bodes well for the SEC that they're actually coming along a lot better in the past few years as far as basketball prowess.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, everybody talks about, parity and obviously the SEC being top heavy. But when I go back again to my playing days, we lost to Florida the game before the Final Four. So we beat Washington State first game. We upset North Carolina. We beat Indiana. And then we ran into a Florida team, and it was down in Miami, who had just previously beaten UConn. And, Florida, that was then they were coached by Lon Kruger, who's obviously had a lot of success, in the college coaching ranks. But, certainly the SEC, I did a Missouri game this year in the NIT for ESPN. The knock, obviously, for Florida. And also, the other teams, Kentucky and the SEC, was that it's really top heavy. I don't necessarily buy that. Obviously, Kentucky and Florida have been the most two most consistent teams in terms of consistently winning in the SEC. But, certainly, once again, I think it goes back to the whole story and the greatness of March Madness, where it doesn't make a difference really what conference. You look at some of the power conferences that you talk, I think it really comes down to the team that has obviously playing the best at this time of the year. And, there's certain things, certain three themes and trends you look for. Obviously, good backcourt play is one of them. And then, a lot of these talented teams, you look at like a Kentucky, all the talent that they have. People forget, too, with Kentucky, look, they were the preseason number one. They're the team that came in with a lot of hype. And obviously, Coach Cal is a master at getting that young talent to mold at the right time.
Malcolm, what has surprised you most about this year's NCAA tournament?
We shouldn't be surprised, but certainly Kentucky's run really has surprised me. And obviously, again, you know, Cal, we shouldn't doubt him, but you look at who they've beaten. I had Wichita State as a team to go and be in the Final Four, even when the selection committee put them, I think, in really one of the toughest brackets. You look at who Kentucky has beaten. I mean, Wichita State, they beat Louisville, they beat Michigan. So I think, you know, that's been the biggest surprise for me. I don't think too many people in particular in the ups and downs that they've had. But we really shouldn't be surprised because, again, I go back to that preseason, all the hype coming in. And, you know, I think Calipari, obviously now everybody's talking about it. But I said this even going back when he had Anthony Davis's on the world where what he does best, it's one thing to have talent. It's another thing to get that talent, in particular young talent. All these guys are coming in, you know, really branded as the one and dones. And he gets them to buy in, not just offensively playing unselfish, but I think the biggest thing that he's underrated on is he gets them really, and it's tough with freshmen because I think that's the biggest adjustment defensively. Forget about the offensive talent that these guys have, but I think, you know, where he really does a good job is getting these guys to buy into his defensive philosophy. And, you know, so that, you know, I probably would say that's probably been the biggest, you know, surprise, although it's really not that big of a surprise, but the run that they've had and who they've beaten to get to the Final Four.
How do you see this Final Four ending up and who's going to play in the national championship game?
Oh, man, I tell you what, I mean, you look at these teams, you just look at them. You know, the other big surprise, obviously, is Wisconsin. You know, Kaminsky, Frank Kaminsky, I mean, you talk about a matchup nightmare, and I think that's going to be a key matchup in that Kentucky game. You look at, you know, Cauley Stein, he's not probably going to be able to go. You know, it plays in, you know, comes into question maybe Kentucky's depth a little bit. But, you know, Wisconsin, you look at them, they're just a veteran team. They don't turn the ball, they don't make too many mistakes. There's one of those teams that they'll spread you out. They got shooters, their backcourt is very solid. And, you know, that's going to be a very interesting matchup. Obviously, Kentucky, Coach Guy talked about what he's done with these freshman guys. You know, all the star power, once again, you know, talent is never enough. I think they really have gelled at the right time. You know, I still like Kentucky in that. I think talent wins out and also the way that they play defense. I think they'll be okay, even with the loss of Cauley Stein, if he's not able to go. You know, obviously that's a big loss. He's averaging close to 8 points a game, I think 5 or 6 rebounds. So certainly, you know, that's going to be a big question mark coming in and how they defend, you know, Frank Kaminsky in Wisconsin. I think, you know, if they can keep him, obviously you don't want him going off for 28 points like he did against Arizona. But I think if they can keep him under wraps, I think Kentucky has a pretty good chance of getting on. And then, you know, you look at this Florida-UConn game. I'm not just jumping on the Shabazz Napier bandwagon now. I did a game for UConn last year. And this is, you know, obviously Kevin Ollie has done an unbelievable job. But going back to last year, UConn, they had a stat in the game, you know, coming into the season where they were really struggling rebounding. And I think they had beat Michigan State early, and this is once again going back to last year, and it just, they were out rebounded, I think, by about 20. They were like a minus 20 in the rebounding department, and they still won the game. And it was really one factor, and it was Shabazz Napier and Boatwright, their play. I mean, typically when a team's out rebounded, you know, that much, you're going to lose. But because Napier can control the tempo of the game, and, you know, what he's able to do, similar to what Kemba Walker did. Walker did on his run with UConn. He's just a phenomenal talent. He's playing right now, in my mind, he's playing the best of any player in the country right now in the tournament. And, you know, that's certainly going to be fun to watch. Him and Scotty Wilbekin go at it. That's a tough matchup because, you know, obviously the first time these two guys played and the last loss really Florida had is against UConn, and Napier hit that buzzer beater. You know, I like UConn in this one. Played against Kevin Ollie, the coach, for 4 years while he was at UConn and I was at Boston College. very happy for him. I think he's done an unbelievable job with this team. Florida, though, you know, everybody's been sleeping on them all year. I mean, really, you know, even look at Scotty Wilbekin. They really don't have, you know, the talent or the hype around, like you look at, like, at the Kentucky, where they have, like, a surefire first rounder. They're just solid, and they've quietly all year, you know, even through the SEC, you know, Wilbekin, you know, SEC Player of the Year, and, you know, really not too many people talking about him throughout the course of the year, but, you know, all he's done quietly is just win, like their coach, Billy Donovan. But I still think, I think this is just a special year for UConn, Kevin Ollie, and Shabazz Napier, to me, has just been phenomenal.
Yeah, Malcolm, that is, you know, that's my sentiment exactly. You know, as far as Shabazz Napier is concerned, this young man has been solid. He's been consistent all year. He, you know, he kind of had his ups in the beginning, but then his name just kind of leveled off for a little bit, if you will, for whatever reason. And, you know, all he's done is just, you know, be consistent for his basketball club and Kevin Ollie. And, you know, Kentucky, what can we say? I mean, what do you say about Kentucky? They're coming in as the eighth seed. And, you know, the seeding has always been a question mark in the NCAA and how they come up with the brackets. Obviously now, in hindsight, that wasn't, you know, obviously they shouldn't have been an eighth seed, but how in the world did that happen?
You know, it's every year we go through this with the selection committee, and, you know, they have a tough job. So to their credit, look, it's not an easy job. Somebody's always going to be disappointed. You look at some of the teams that didn't get in this year, you know, that are always felt like they're worthy. I mean, look, they have a difficult job, but I think I'm not as surprised as to the Kentucky because, look, they really struggled. They hit a lot of bumps in the road throughout the course of the year. But I'm not surprised, as I said earlier, at the run they're on because talent-wise and, you know, remember, people, you know, forget that this team was, you know, preseason, you know, really one of the teams that, you know drawing really a lot of similarities or, you know, a lot of comparisons to the Fab Five where, you know, just another great freshman class. You look at Julius Randle, you know, reminds me of a young Zach Randolph. I mean, just so much talent on there. And then I think really Coach Calipari, look, it's one thing to have talent. It's another thing to manage those egos and get all five guys, all eight guys, you know, nine guys in your rotation, really get those guys to buy into offensive unselfishness and also defensive unselfishness.
You know, good
you
point,
got guys now, they're hedging on ball screens. You know, if guys are getting beat, they're recovering. They're really, really, you know, not playing like freshmen anymore. And I think, you know, you got to give him a lot of credit. So the seeding, I think, look, you throw it out the window come NCAA tournament time. We were an eight seed, and, you know, we wound up going, you know, to the Elite Eight. I think that 8-9 seed is always probably the toughest. You know, you look at a Wisconsin, because typically that 8-9 seed is coming from a power conference. They've been through all those tough battles. And, you know, it's a team that really kind of nobody wants to see because they typically either, A, have a talent-laden team like Kentucky or a team like a Wisconsin where you got some veteran guards and then you have one or two matchup nightmares where it's either a forward or a big. That's probably not your traditional big forward matchup, and you know, teams really have a difficult time matching up with that player. So I certainly, you know, really respect the 8-19, you know, coming in. That's what we were. We had, you know, three good guards. Myself, Howard Eisen, who had a long NBA career, Billy Curley, who was a first-round draft pick. You know, Eisley, you know, had an 8-9 year career. I had a cup of tea with Miami Heat, and you know, look, it's those teams that, you know, have some juniors and seniors on their team, guys that have been playing in the power conference. That I think, you know, certainly whether it's a mid major or power conference, if you have those teams that have been playing together, you know, they pose some matchup problems.
Malcolm Huckabee, kind enough to join us on the double with the Double S Express. And, of course, Malcolm, you were mentioning your college career and playing in the NBA for a little bit with the Miami Heat and then overseas. one of the things I believe that our listeners probably don't know is, of course, you being an ESPN college basketball analyst, but you growing up in the backyard of ESPN right there in Bristol.
I was. I could, see ESPN from my little two-bedroom apartment on Emmett Street. And my parents, we laughed, but I could, I could probably walk in a blizzard to ESPN and it'd take me about 2 minutes to get there. It's a lot of great memories. ESPN, I joke with people. I said, it's the only place I know that can put a McDonald's out of business. There's a little McDonald's. If you're from Bristol, you know this. There's a little McDonald's that was a staple across the street from ESPN when it started off. When I know it, it was one little small building, and now it's a campus. It's like a college campus. I'm not sure if you guys have been down there, but it's like a little college campus. They've taken over a little section of Bristol, and certainly a lot of great memories growing up there. Played on some really good high school basketball teams, state championship teams, and it's been I've been blessed to be able to come back and work at ESPN and call games and do something that I would do for free. I have always said this, and something I've heard from Coach Pat Riley when I was down in Miami, where you've been blessed when you've been able to play the game at a high level. And certainly now coming back and being able to be a commentator and do something that I grew up and work at a place that I grew up really dreaming about getting at as a young kid growing up, it's just been really, the only thing I can say is I've just been blessed.
So were you in a small fraternity, if you will? I mean, what was it like being a kid growing up in Bristol? Was that every kid's dream to work for ESPN, or were you in a small company?
No, I think just first and foremost, I was blessed too to have two parents that valued education. But like most kids growing up, you either dream of playing in the NFL, NBA, or Major League Baseball. I actually was drafted out of high school by the Houston Astros to play baseball. And fortunately, my parents are smart enough. I was like Pedro from Major League, where if you threw a curve at me, I certainly had issues with that one. But you throw anything straight, I can hit it. It wasn't something that I was thinking about growing up, quite frankly. I certainly, my first goal was to, go on and see if I can play at the highest level. At that time, it was playing in the Big East. The Big East as I know it, which was, a lot of those Georgetown, Syracuse, UConn. Doing the game, I still laughed, when I met with Kevin Ollie beforehand to do my pre-game research, and we just laughed about just some of the battles we had as players in the Big East and going down and playing in Madison Square Garden for the Big East tournament. So really, working at ESPN really was not something that I'll be honest with you, I was thinking about. Quite frankly, I did not step foot in ESPN until about 3 years ago. A lot of it had to do with my parents. Both my parents, they moved to probably about 30 seconds closer to a little condo over in Bristol. But, my mom would see a lot of these ESPN guys after I had finished up my playing career and I've been working in the financial services industry. And she said, parents are, and especially mothers are a little biased. She said, you're smart. You understand the game. You played at a high level. You got a great voice. You should think about getting into, broadcasting. And, she would see a lot of these guys because, as I said, my parents still live pretty close to ESPN. And she would see a lot of these personalities at a little food bag, which, once again, if you're from Bristol, you know where this place is. It's one of the things that survived as ESPN expanded, and it's a little gas station / convenience store that's right down the street from ESPN. And she would see a lot of these guys, and that's how this whole thing started. So I think, a lot of it, again, going back to being blessed and being fortunate and just allowing God to guide me, it wasn't something that I was thinking about. It certainly was not anything in college or as a kid growing up that I really had, thought about. But certainly it is something that, once again, I just feel very fortunate. I'm sure there's a lot of people, whether it be former players or non-athletes. Heck, I get guys that are in my office in financial services, Merrill Lynch, Bank of America, where they would give up anything to be able to be on ESPN.
Malcolm, take us behind the scenes at ESPN before you were actually doing your first game for ESPN as an analyst. How does that work? Is there some sort of set training? Do they have you do some games to tape and do some behind the scenes practice? How does that all come together?
Yeah, it did. So I actually started off with on the radio side. I actually started for IMG, and actually it was a great training. It was really great preparation for me because radio is actually similar to television, but it really teaches you how to get in and out. Radio, remember, the people listening, the audience listening, they don't have the luxury of watching the television. So you have to be quick. You have to be in and out. And it's almost the mentality of foul line to three-point line, get your point in, and then, at the free throw line or at a break, coming out of a break or during halftime or post game, you can certainly get a little bit more long winded. So, I had some training, with radio, and then, I think the biggest thing that helped me going back to the radio was certainly you obviously have to understand the game. And I think because I played for, Hall of Fame coach, played for some great coaches, played for a great coach in college, the knowledge and some of the experiences, that you've had as a player, I think most of it comes down to, how quickly you can get that information out to the audience. Because believe me, a lot of guys, have tried to do it, and a lot of guys know the game. I think any player who's played the game at a high level or played for a long time, understands the game. If you sit down with them, in kind of in a setting where they don't have to be quick or get in and out, certainly they can break down plays. They can tell you what a player's done wrong. They can talk about, hedging on ball screens or, checking cutters, locking and trailing on screens. I mean, they can really get detailed in terms of what a coach is doing, what they want to do defensively. But the biggest thing, once again, is, you want to be able to get in, get out, and be clear and concise on your points. So, yes, there is some training. Certainly you get a lot of feedback. You do a lot of, preparation and you'll do some, some mock games, in studio down there. And then, a lot of it comes down to really is, either you understand the flow of the game and you can get in and get out and be successful at it, or, they'll probably pass on, putting you on live TV.
Malcolm, your favorite personal moment in basketball, whether it be playing or now as an analyst?
So playing certainly has to be, I'll take you, high school, winning the state championship. My senior year, we were undefeated, 24-0, we won the state championship, number one in New England. I believe we wound up number 20 in the country. So high school, it was definitely that. For college, it was certainly, getting to the Elite Eight. Came up a little short against Florida. So it was great. And then, professionally, probably was, playing for the Miami Heat in particular after I it wound up being a career-ending ankle injury when I was in Italy. Fought my way back, got back on the court, and wound up signing a contract with the Miami Heat. And certainly, as a young man growing up, was a huge Laker fan. Either you loved the Celtics or you hated the Celtics, or you loved the Lakers or you hated Lakers. And I happen to be a Laker fan. And, I got my dream of, playing for Coach Pat Riley, made some wonderful friendships. Eric Flesser, now who's the coach of the Miami Heat, was started off as a video guy when I was down in Miami. So, and you knew he was going to be a great coach, obviously a great mind. Stan Van Gundy was down there as an assistant. Jeff Bisdellet, was an assistant. Unfortunately, not at Wake Forest, but I had some great experiences And I would probably say, obviously, at the professional, the best was, you know, just being around Pat Riley, seeing how he managed practices, his preparation, both physically for guys. Certainly, I think I'm still out of breath after the training camps I had to go through with him. And, you know, just how he operated, you know, you just, you know, marvel at how his attention to detail with everything, you know, practices, charting pluses and minuses in practice, you know, his attention to detail, end of the game situations. I learned a lot, and, you know, certainly it's a memory that I will never forget.
Malcolm Huckabee, kind enough to join us on the double with the Double S Express. And Malcolm, man, there's a lot of information to intake. When's your next gig? What's on the agenda for you coming up here in the following weeks?
Well, thank goodness I did my, obviously ESPN does not do, the NCAA tournament. And, you know, I did a bunch of shows leading up to it. My wife was happy as heck that, my season is pretty much, wound up and done. I'll probably do a couple more appearances, on radio, but, you know, for the most part, I am done. So you'll have to look out for me next year when the, college hoop season starts up again. And, you know, I cover, you know, Horizon, ACC, I'll do a couple of Big Ten games, and then I'll have a couple of floater games where I'll, you know, get a Big South game or, you know, do an SEC game. So, but my bread and butter is the ACC and the Horizon League. So, you guys will have to look out for my schedule next year. We'll certainly, keep in touch, but, you know, for all intents and purposes, it's a long season. a lot of games. I loved it. It was great. But certainly, towards the end of the season, it's certainly good to be home on weekends.
Well, definitely. And Malcolm, sounds like you have a baseball background, and so we'd probably have you on again in a few weeks or so, and we can talk a little bit of baseball, especially since it's opening day. For those of you who want to get a hold of Malcolm Huckabee, you can go on Twitter at Hucka, HUCKA3. And that is, and of course, you can tweet Malcolm back and forth there. And of course, in the off season, man, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. And also thank you, man, because you're 3 hours ahead, East Coast, Eastern Standard Time. So thank you for staying up late with us, man.
Hey, I appreciate it, guys, and I enjoyed it. Thanks a lot for having me on.
Thanks for your time, Malcolm.
All right, take care.
There goes Malcolm Huckabee, ESPN college basketball analyst. And it was just touched on briefly there by Sean Boyd. When we return after this, we will get to opening day. Major League Baseball is underway. You're listening to On the Double with the Double S Express.
Who likes the inconvenience of car repairs? Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services, platinum service without the platinum price.
Guys, are you having trouble getting to sleep? Would you like to know the secret to getting a great night's sleep every night? Bruce Feeney discovered this secret, a new, all-natural sleep aid for men. Listen to what he says about it.
Hey, you know, I tried a product recently called Love to Sleep. It was a great product, helped me a lot. Took 3 or 4 days for it to start working in my system, and I fell asleep very quickly and got up rested. And if I got up during the middle of the night, I ended up coming back to bed and fell right back to sleep. I would recommend it to all my friends.
If you, too, would love to get a good night's sleep every night, and wake up feeling great in the morning. Try Love to Sleep, the new sleep aid for men. Your satisfaction is 100% guaranteed. And because Love to Sleep is all natural, it's completely safe, with no side effects or risk of dependency. Go to lovetosleep.com. That's lovetosleep.com.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally and Sean Boyd. Standing in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. And the world's gonna
know your name. Yeah. Welcome back to our final segment here on the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd. So many sports, so little time, Mr. Boyd. And it is opening day of not fishing season, but Major League Baseball.
Yeah, and this is one of those, this was a day that we were looking at for quite some time. And, you know, it's real interesting, Sean, because we never really talk about baseball. We hadn't talked about baseball for a while. And then all of a sudden, you know, here we are, opening day, the smell of fresh grass, baseball being played from, you know, on West Coast time from, wow, I believe the first pitch was like 10 a.m. And, man, it's been a great day so far.
Well, our big-time guest from last week, Rich Waltz, the TV voice of the Miami Marlins, had a great game to call as the Marlins put a whooping on Colorado 10-1.
Yeah, man, the bats were definitely flying with the Marlins. And, you know, when you have the top of your lineup doing what they did, you know, you had Yelich, he was 2-for-5. And you know, then you had Stanton as well, also 2-for-5. And had a couple RBIs as well. So, I mean, these guys got off to a great start. And so, you know, it's kind of sacrilegious, you know, Sean, to talk about opening day, because opening day is that, you know, again, that day for baseball season to start. But then at the same time, when you look at the grand scheme of things, there's 161 more games to go. And so it doesn't matter what the first game looks like. I mean, you have to really establish some type of a consistency in baseball. I mean, gee whiz, 162 games in a season. That's staggering.
It is a marathon indeed. Sean, did you see the game that went on in Texas? I believe it was a football game they played between the Phillies and the Rangers. And first of all, I'm doing a double take. I'm like, Phillies and Rangers, that's like interleague play for opening day. I'm a little confused here. 14-10.
Yeah, you know, and it was a football score. And, you know, when you're in spring training, one of the biggest things is to try to find your rhythm. And let's face it, these guys, you know, they're just out there having fun, getting, you know, kind of getting their legs back, getting their swing back in spring training. And then all of a sudden, the last three or four games, they try to find a rhythm. You have a question on who is the most nervous. Is it the pitcher or the batter? And 9 times out of 10, the most nervous is the pitcher, because that's the one that's you know, that has to be perfect. When you're a batter in the beginning of the season, you're so relaxed, you're so calm, you're in the batter's box, you're just waiting for your pitch, and you're knocking them out of the park. And 14-10, I mean, that shows it right there. I mean, who would have thought that that would be the case? And gee whiz, I mean, man, yeah, it looks like a, you know, the Philadelphia Eagles, man, 14 points. A lot of runs being scored.
And for all of our West Coast fans, we've got three games still in the early goings. The Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, 2. The Mariners of Seattle, 1 in the bottom of the third. In Oakland, the A's taking on the Cleveland Indians, and that is 0-0 in the fourth. And the San Francisco Giants trail the Arizona Diamondbacks 4-2.
Well, Hernandez just got a shot smacked on him by Pujols, and you know Pujols gets a stand-up double, manufactures a run, so the Angels go up 3-1. You know, this should be an exciting time in the AL West, especially for the Oakland A's. I mean, you know, there's a huge question mark going in for the Oakland A's. Of course, they are the two-time, and I'll say it again, not once, but two-time AL West champions. And they're starting out their season with a lot of questions in their bullpen and in their starting pitching. And so they've got Sonny Gray, who's the young pitcher who was their ace this year. But, man, I mean, you know, Billy Beane does a very good job as far as manufacturing players. But, again, it's a 162-game season, but it doesn't look too good in the beginning for the Oakland A's. But we'll see, man. I mean, there's a lot of pressure on their backs as far as coming in as the defending AL West champions. And can they get past the first round when they get in the postseason? So that's a, you know, one of the things to look forward to in the AL West.
And the first month of the season can really make your entire season or break it, because you play the other teams in your own division the majority of the first month. You're facing the same teams at home and on the road. And, you know, if you go 500 or thereabouts, you're setting yourself up to have an okay season. If you tank it, then you've got a huge uphill battle.
Well, you know, you're speaking from experience, Sean Wally, because, you know, being a Seattle Mariners fan, I mean, you know, when they start off slow, you know, it's like, oh, my goodness, you know, and then they find these ways of come ripping off maybe six-game winning streaks and maybe 8 to 10-game winning streaks. They'll win the series with their opponents, maybe 4 out of the next 5 series, and they've still dug a hole for themselves. So you're right. I mean, you know, starting out the beginning of the season is so critical, and that's, you know, in any sport. But, you know, if you don't, that first month for Major League Baseball, if you don't get out to a great start, yeah, it's pretty much curtains.
Yeah, and teams like to tease you and fool you and make you think that, oh, they're turning the corner, they're getting better, let's go watch, let's go buy a ticket, let's buy the merchandise. And then they continue to do what they've been doing, and that's disappoint.
And that's why when you live in the cities like Oakland, Seattle, you kind of look forward to that next sport or professional sport that comes around the corner, because, you know, it's just painful to go through it for a full 162 games.
That's the voice of Sean Boyd down in Elk Grove, California. I am Sean Wally, Tri-Cities, Washington. This is On the Double with the Double S Express as we wrap up show 46. Can you believe that, Sean? 46th show and counting.
Man, moving right along. If this was the 80s, you know, the 46 defense was a great defense for the Chicago Bears. And so 46 is a great number to be moving right along with, man. And got many more to come.
And many more great big-time guests coming down the pipeline, and a great job of booking those big-time guests by our big-time guest coordinator, Alicia Flores, bringing the big guests to us and helping the show move along in style.
Yeah, man, fantastic guests. Of course, you're talking about Lee Steinberg today, a sports agent extraordinaire, and, you know, getting a chance to pick his brain a little bit on what it takes to actually be a great agent and what it takes as far as preparation is concerned, you know, not just for himself, but for, you know, for athletes. You know, that was a great guest. And of course, having on Malcolm Huckabee, sports analyst for college basketball for ESPN. Awesome guest, getting a chance to talk about his, you know, him growing up in Bristol and actually landing a dream job with ESPN, man. I mean, that is spectacular stuff, Sean Wally.
Yeah, who knew? I learned a lot about Malcolm, and who knew that he grew up in Bristol. Like he said, he could see the ESPN compound just grow and grow and get bigger and bigger and take over more of the Bristol territory.
Yeah, you know, I can imagine that would be fun. I, you know, growing up in Tacoma, Washington, my biggest thing, you know, we would sit in the cafeteria and talk sports all the time. And, you know, I've always said before there was the ESPN's First Take, you know, we would go at it at snack break and at lunch and just expand our knowledge as far as sports was concerned. So I can only imagine growing up in Bristol, just looking across the way and seeing ESPN right there. I mean, man, he made it. He made it. He's one of the few that's made it. And so that's a testament to Mr. Huckabee.
Now, don't forget, it is April Fool's Eve. So don't fall for any of those pranks tomorrow.
Yeah, most definitely. And so, you know, it's been a great show, Sean Wally. And, of course, for our listeners who want to get a chance to listen to some of our past shows, they can go on double-s-express.com, or they can go on to bbsradio.com/DSX. If you want to send us an email, you can send an email to me, Sean, S-E-A-N, at double-S-Express, or to Sean Wally, S-H-A-W-N, at double-S-Express.com. Let us know your thoughts. Let us know some of the things that you would like to hear. And, man, show number 46. And, of course, you can also catch us on Twitter as well. And, man, Sean, show number 46, and it was a great one today, man.
That's what we're trying to bring, good, consistent shows and guests with great knowledge and insight.
So that's going to do it this week for us on the Double with the Double S Express. For Sean Wally, our engineer Don Newsom, of course, Alicia Flores, I'm Sean Boyd. We will see you next week.
Thanks for listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for great sports talk and big-time guests. On the Double with the Double S Express.